One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
In part one of this two-part deep dive into the catacombs of Paris, we looked a lot at the brutal and gruesome history that made the catacombs the macabre abyss that it is today. We talked about secret societies within the crypts and some of the dangers that explorers might face while they're down there. But now let's talk about some ghosts. I've got a few strange stories from the depths that I'm really excited to share with you guys, and we're also going to be taking a look at some of the most bizarre locations that at the time of this episode's airing were known to still exist. With the ever-changing nature of the catacombs, however, one can never truly be sure what they will or won't find. I'm your ghost, John. This is the 21CD Podcast. Let's get into it. Hey guys, welcome back to the 21CD Podcast. This is part two of my Paris Catacombs little series that I'm doing here. Hope you guys are having a great one, and don't forget to like, follow, and share. We're going to go over some of the places that are said to exist deep within the catacombs in this episode, like I already said in the intro. And I'm also going to tell you a couple stories, one of which is from a friend that I had while I was in the military back in the earlier 2000 days. He had gone down into the catacombs one time and said that he had a bizarre experience that he couldn't really explain. So I'm going to tell that story. It'll be the first time, as far as I know, that the story has ever even been told. As always, my sources are going to be in the show notes. I use a lot of notes for this episode because it is just so hard to keep track of everything. And like I said in episode or part one of this, like this was a 20-page write-out. So I've got to keep notes, got to keep the timeline flowing so that the episode makes sense. And you guys can review all my sources if you want. They'll be available for you. A quick disclaimer, I'm not good at speaking French. There's going to be some names in here that I say, some titles of places that I just butcher. So I'm terribly sorry, but I just am not very good at French. There's that. There's also going to be a bunch of video content and image content that are put up on the screen for those of you who watch the YouTube. If you guys are a podcast listener, you might want to check out the YouTube for this two-part episode series because there's a lot of really cool stuff. And I'll be crediting the YouTubers whose footage I use because you guys should check out their stuff too. It's really incredible. Some of the footage that people are able to get from the catacombs these days is just mind-blowing. So all of that will be credited, and you will know exactly whose footage it is and exactly what sources I used. So you guys know I'm not making anything up or whatever people assume of people like me these days. But yeah, guys, please follow the YouTube and the Instagram. I really need to get this thing growing. Surprisingly, like when I first started this podcast, I had no idea how quickly the actual podcast part of it. Those of you who listen through the podcast through just audio, give yourselves a round of applause because you guys are growing the 21 CD podcast monumentally. And the OGs that have been following my YouTube since basically the beginning, bravo to you guys too. This weekend, we had a ton of growth this past weekend, and we're continuing to grow, and I just can't tell you guys how much I appreciate it. But there's a lot of changes that are coming up in the 21 CD podcast world. My studio, this is one of three more weeks that I will be recording in this studio before I move back up to the great frigid north and have to find a new studio. Temporarily, I will be doing episodes in a library that my dad built, but yeah, this is going to be changing, which is very bittersweet because I love this studio. It's my favorite place to hang out right now. So please follow the YouTube and the Instagram. That's where the updates are. We're going to be doing different kinds of episodes, including camping, wilderness stuff, looking for monsters and looking for ghosts. And I would love to take you guys along, but all of the updates will be on the Instagram and the YouTube, and you can find that at 21 CD Podcast. So, let's get into it. Philibert Espert is said to walk the winding, ever-changing halls of the catacombs. The ghost of Philibert is said to help lost explorers, warning them to turn back, or guiding them to safety through whispers and murmurs from another realm. The Val di Grazie Hospital, a sanctuary in the heart of Paris during the tumultuous days of the French Revolution, held within its walls the echoes of suffering and whispers of despair. Philibert, the doorkeeper with weary eyes, carried the weight of the hospital's secrets. But an unspeakable force beckoned him into the depths below. It began with strange occurrences within the hospital walls, flickering lights, disembodied whispers, and chilling drafts that seemed to defy explanation. Philibert, a man of simple convictions, couldn't ignore the spectral signs that hinted at an ancient malevolence seeping through the cracks of the revolution-torn city. One fateful night, a fevered dream plagued Philibert's sleep. In the dream, he stood at the entrance of the Val di Grazie, a dim glow emanating from beneath the cobblestones. A voice, laden with sorrow, echoed through the corridors of his mind, calling him to the catacombs beneath Paris. A haunting melody, a symphony of the forgotten, lured him into the darkness. Compelled by an otherworldly force, Philibert awoke with a newfound determination. The hospital, a beacon of hope, had become a vessel for something ancient and malevolent. Guided by the spectral whispers, he descended into the bowels of the city, through narrow tunnels and forgotten passages, until he reached the entrance of the catacombs. The catacombs, a realm of bones and shadows, welcomed Philibert like an old acquaintance. The air grew dense with an oppressive stillness, and the dim light of his lantern flickered as if in communication with the spirits that lurked in the shadows. As he ventured deeper, the walls seemed to come alive with the faces of the departed, their hollow eyes following his every move. Whispers of long-lost souls filled the air, telling tales of betrayal, anguish, and the price paid for meddling with forces beyond mortal comprehension. It's unknown what Philibert found deep within the catacombs, and his reasons for entering them in the first place remain a mystery to this day. Some say he had had enough of the never-ending plague of death that had hung over Paris for his entire life. Losing his mind, or longing to forever be rid of the horrors that he had witnessed while at the hospital, he simply walked deeper and deeper into the catacombs until his single candle burned out. For a while longer, he meandered, cold and alone in the dark, until he perished. Others say perhaps he was looking for something, whether it be God or some secret entrance to a nearby brewery. For some, the two are one and the same. We will never know why Philibert descended into the abyss. Not much was left of him when he was finally found in a tunnel outside of Paris, but the buttons on his jacket and the key ring were enough to identify him. His remains were buried where they were found, in a small personal tomb. The stone grave marker roughly translates to, "In the memory of Philibert Espert, lost in this excavation of 3 November 1793. Found 11 years later and buried at the same place on 30 April 1804. Today, the room where Espert is buried is a popular meeting place for the cataphiles, people who enjoy exploring the dark tunnels beneath Paris. So yeah, the ghost of Philibert Espert, I hope I'm saying that right because I said it so many times, is probably the most famous ghost that's said to walk the catacombs. And kind of like I already said, he's a good ghost. He does attempt to lead lost travelers to safety, apparently. And if you are in need, it's sometimes said that he will appear. He's largely regarded as the last hope if you run out of light down in the catacombs. And he was a doorman at a hospital during the French Revolution. And as you can imagine, that was a very, very brutal time to be alive. People were getting beheaded every day. It was something, I can't remember the exact number, but it's
somewhere between 15,000 and 17,000 people were decapitated during this time period.
And that included the guy who was in charge of all the beheadings, because the revolutionists, the revolutionaries, whatever they're called, they actually got him, and they were like, all right, it's time for you to have a taste of your own medicine. They chopped off his head, and he is also buried in the catacombs, which is wild. But because of all the bones, they don't know where his body is. So he could be down there too, haunting the place. Who knows? But Philibert Espert is definitely the most famous ghost. And there are a couple places that we are going to discuss today that are equally as infamous as his ghost. The first place that I kind of want to talk about is this location known as the Monk Room. This room is like an intricately carved sort of ceremonial place. There's this beautiful staircase carved from the stone that leads down to this, like, basin area. And it's usually all lit up with candles. And you sort of just happen upon the monk room. It's just, you're just kind of walking through the tunnels, through the catacombs, and then just all of a sudden, it opens up a little bit, and you can take this staircase down to a lower area that has been cut out of the earth. And down there is sort of this counter made of stone, and in it is a basin. And all this area is usually kind of lit up with candles. It's said that cataphiles will go to the place, light the candles, and sort of leave it like that as a sign of respect and honoring the place. And historically, it is a place where the miners who were originally digging down here would collect water and would hang out. And the coolest thing about the monk room is that the basin is actually filled with water from a fountain that is in a church, like 3 to 5 stories above the basin. So the water from the fountain in the church above will actually drip down through the earth and fill the basin. It's absolutely crazy. It's said that the cataphiles actually baptize each other in this basin during important moments, such as the indoctrination or inclusion of a new member to their society. The fountain is fed by a much more elaborate one that is on the surface, several stories above, inside of a church. A little history on the place. Although general opinion might suggest this has always been a religious place, it was actually constructed in 1819 by the General of the Inspection of the Quarries, IGC for short, in order to supply water to the workers that were in the depths. It is only the modern inhabitants that use it for sacred purposes. But, I mean, look at it. If you guys are watching on the YouTube, just check this stuff out. If you guys are listening on the podcast, just do your best to imagine you're walking along the catacombs and all of a sudden it opens up and you can take this staircase that looks like the entrance to like something out of Skyrim or some fantasy movie like Lord of the Rings or something, and you can take this staircase down to a lower level and there's sort of this whole little area cut out and there's a basin at the end of this cutout area where baptisms are held by the cataphiles, and the whole place is just lit with the orange light of candles. It's amazing. Check it out on the YouTube if you are so inclined. I've been deep in like caves and stuff a lot of times when I grew up in Missouri for the most part, and tons of caves in Missouri that when I was just like a young teenager, I was just ridiculous. Thankfully, I still lived in that time where kids played outside and stuff and didn't have technology around them all the time. I didn't even have my first phone until I was like 18. And I was in the army and they basically told me, you have to have a cell phone so that we know how to contact you when we need you. And that was the first cell phone I ever had. But I digress. When I was growing up in Missouri, there were these caves that we would always crawl into, and our parents were always warning us, like, you gotta be careful of, like, noxious gases, and if you're crawling belly first through a cave and something pops out at you and attacks your face, what are you gonna do? And we're just like, I don't know. But I'm not gonna lie, when I was researching the monk room, that was the first time that I was like, oh yeah, I want to go into the catacombs. The catacombs have always been kind of creepy. I've been okay with like looking at them from a distance, despite the fact that I'm extremely interested in them, obviously. But when I saw the monk room, I was just like, dude, maybe I can go down into the catacombs just a little bit. Maybe somebody can bring me to the monk room and then I'll just peace out. So pretty insane looking place. And I'm going to leave it at that. I would love to go to the monk room. If anybody is watching this and knows how to get to the monk room in the catacombs, let me know. Maybe I'll plan a little impromptu trip. So here's some more craziness. The invasion of France in World War II by Nazi Germany was a wake-up call to the nations of Western Europe that their initial attempts to head off a second great war by allowing Hitler to continue his annexation of the nations around him would only exacerbate the terrible situation that they faced. As a result of the Quisling's appeasement policies, Germany was able to invade France with a force that it was not prepared for. And as a result, the Nazis occupied the city, Paris. The French did not take the atrocities that the Germans placed upon them lightly, however, and as a result, a strong underground resistance developed in the country, led by President in Exile Charles de Gaulle. The resistance persevered despite despite the atrocities and executions carried out upon them by the Nazis, probably because of the fact that they were experts at secrecy and picking their battles. Dude, we talk a lot of smack about the French. Let's be honest. You've all said something kind of rude about the French, right? But these guys know how to resist an occupation. Let's give it to them. Last time I was in France, I kind of told you guys a little bit. When I was in France this last time, they were in the middle of that revolution with the Yellow Jackets. I don't know if you guys remember this. This was a few years ago at this point. But France was yet again, this is a modern thing that they were not showing on TV, but I was there. The Yellow Jackets and the people were attempting to essentially overthrow their government. And because of that, the army, the French army, was patrolling the streets of like tourist attraction places, like everywhere. And I remember one morning I was out, me and my wife had just gotten a little, and I had my brothers there as well and some friends. And we had just gotten like pastries and coffees and we were just walking around. It was like 6 in the morning. And I saw this long troop of soldiers like walking down these beautiful streets, cobblestone and like pillars and the flags, the whole nine, typical France, like that beautiful blue-gray tone, like everything. And I was just like, this is iconic. I whip out my camera just to take a photo. And these guys are like armed to the teeth and they don't look nice at all. And they run up to me and they snatch my camera from me. Because believe it or not, before I was a podcaster, I was a photographer. So like, this is kind of what I did. I had a business doing it. I would take people to other countries, bizarre locations in the world that are cheaper to travel to for one reason or another. And so I was taking pictures of pretty much everything. And this soldier snatched my camera from me. And he started speaking in French because obviously he thought I was a Frenchman and I'm not a Frenchman. And so I was like, I don't get what you're saying. I don't know. I'm a tourist. And he was like, delete the photos or I will smash this entire camera. Okay, so now that's not as much of a problem. But, and that, again, another tangent. I'm sorry, guys. This is what you get when I record early in the morning. I just start speaking what's ever on my mind. But my point is, during the Nazi occupation of Paris, these underground Frenchmen just like resisting this resistance, this résistance, like that is a thing that happens throughout the history of France. And those people are pretty hardcore when it comes to resisting what they consider corrupt. So whatever. The French catacombs were destined to be made so that the French resistance had somewhere to meet in and keep the spirit of the country alive. After all, they seemed to be a perfect fit for quite literal underground meetings out of the eyes of others. Secluded, not well known by many, and twisting on for miles, the tunnels of the catacombs bring up images of harried individuals trading plans amidst the bones before going out and completing their business. Can you just imagine? Like, I'm getting shivers right now. Like, you're down here, it's dark, there's thousands of Nazis in Paris above just wrecking the city and being Nazis, generally terrible people, and you're just, you know, 60 to 100 feet below ground, however deep you are, you know, you're sitting in this pile of human bones and you're waiting for your comrade to show up with plans for the next attack, hoping that he doesn't get captured or killed on this mission so that you guys can complete it and save your country. That is crazy, dude. Why are there no movies about that? However, it gets a little bit difficult for the French resistance because the Nazis also started to use the tunnels when they came into the city as a way to consolidate their power. and began to build bunkers for their soldiers in the underground that connected to the catacombs. One central bunker was located under a Parisian school called the Lycée Montaigne, I think. Le Parisien describes it and its connection to the catacombs. It was occupied at the time of by the staff of the Luftwaffe, the German aviation, the elite Luftwaffe. Still retains traces of the Nazi occupation, but 20 meters underground were the remains of a shelter built in 1941. A Nazi bunker is still nestled. During the bombing, the officers of the staff retreated there in the company of the small staff. I'm assuming soldiers. This is written by a Frenchman and then translated, so it's a little bit different. But a whole network of undergrounds connected this shelter to others in the basements of Paris. So the Luftwaffe are also moving into the catacombs and the bunkers adjacent to the catacombs. So now you have this situation where there is a mini, war going on in the Paris catacombs between the French resistance, the ghost of Philibert Aspert, and the Luftwaffe. Dude, this is insane. I am a huge World War II buff. I've been to Bastogne, I've done the whole thing and all that, but this is something different. This is that is the most metal thing I've ever heard. Atlas Obscura points to another underground bunker underneath the Gare de l'Est as evidence that the Germans were working in the area. Underneath the daily humdrum activities, there exists a carefully maintained bunker whose history is shrouded in secrecy. The underground space stretches across 1,290 square feet below platforms 2 and 3. Half finished by the French, who designed it as an air raid shelter, it was completed by the Germans during their occupation of Paris. As seen by the inscriptions on the walls, the subterranean chamber's purpose and the extent to which it was used is unknown, but the key locations suggest it could have been a very important hiding place for the Nazis. Dude, I just can't get over how crazy that is. The Paris catacombs had stopped being used long before even the First World War, but it still lingered under the city, waiting in its time of need to serve a different purpose. Like the resistance that had used it, it lingered and survived through the war, through hostile conditions, and now is remembered for its service during the conflict. Perhaps there are even still some hidden plans and artifacts from the operations underground, squirreled away in some alcove or behind some loosely packed stone. And the cataphiles who originally found this place said that when they got to it, when it was undiscovered after the war and all that kind of stuff, when they got to it, it was still filled with weapons and all sorts of artifacts. So yeah, it's completely possible that there are more places down there that are just filled with World War II treasures. We have no idea. It's Paris, dude. What kind of stuff was in Paris that was valuable? And did the Nazis hide some of that underground? What about the resistance? Did the resistance hide some of that underground in these catacombs? And it's just still down there? Dude, there could be treasures down there beyond our wildest imagination and we just have no idea. Everybody was smuggling art during World War II. Who knows what's down there? But we know for sure that the Nazis and the resistance were down there. And those are two parties that one would definitely want to steal art and the other would definitely want to protect art. Or whatever it is. You know what I mean? That is so wild. I've also heard that there were times that these battles in the catacombs and these sort of I don't even know how you would describe it, but these parties in the catacombs would work so closely and yet unbeknownst to each other. So, like, they would be mere walls apart from each other. But because it's, you know, confusing down there and there's a lot of stone, they couldn't really hear each other all the time. So, like, there were instances where they were literally right next to each other and had no idea. Dude, it's just the craziest stuff, man. Humans are wild sometimes. The stuff that we go through, the stuff that we've gone through. So by now we can see that there are a plethora of strange places deep within the catacombs. Near one of the main entranceways to the catacombs is a place that is called the beach because of a beautiful wall painting of a wave. Close to this, a surprising figure lurks in the dark, waiting to greet curious visitors. A giant clay mud golem stands within the room, and this thing is crazy looking. Like, when I first saw it, I was like, what the heck is that? I had to look at a ton of pictures and video of it before I was like, okay, that's just a clay mud golem. But when you first see it, it looks like a monster. He is seemingly holding the weight of Paris in his mighty hands. It is not known how old the golem is or who built it, but it is made by artistic cataphiles who wish to express themselves creatively. This golem is the only known large statue in the whole network, though there are smaller carvings that can be found on walls, and actually there are some other statues and carvings that I was able to find images of, including like architectural ones, like things like buildings and boats and castles. The most enduring of the Paris Catacombs exhibits are a series of stone carvings created by a slightly mysterious figure called Decuré. He was a veteran of the French army and spent some time in Menorca when the French annexed the island from the British. When not helping his fellow quarrymen stabilize the tunnels, he carved faithful renderings of the Citadel of Mahon, as well as other important buildings from that island. They are incongruous, unexpected, and not really connected to anything, but fascinating nonetheless. Decuré was killed in a rock fall while working in the catacombs. No word on where he was buried. Dude. There are also places that are beyond our knowledge, places that have never been documented, where no doubt further strange sights can be seen. Many have gotten lost attempting to find these locations and see things that almost nobody has seen before. It is exploration in its truest sense, and there is some kind of primal urge to push yourself further and further into the depths. Unfortunately, this urge does not guarantee survival in any capacity. All right, I'm going to stop the episode here. I'm going to do a quick disclaimer. I am going to show a pretty gruesome scene on the screen. So I hope I don't get canceled for this, but I feel like it is important to share. Because we sit here and we glamorize the catacombs so much that we forget the horrors of death down there, I think. I mean, I think when you're down there, you're probably horrified of death. But us on the surface, who may have the urge to go explore the catacombs in some capacity or whatever the case may be, we might forget that this place is still deadly and people die down here. The image you're about to be shown does contain that of a deceased individual who was not found in the catacombs of Paris. However, she was found in the catacombs of Ukraine. But the idea is generally the same. I find it educational and relevant to the topic, despite the fact that it is in a different location. The image portrayed is of a female who was lost for nearly 2 years in the catacombs of Ukraine. But as I said a second ago, I feel that it relates to the topic at hand in a way that showcases the danger of the catacombs and the hazards that can quickly and easily turn a fun expedition into the most unimaginable nightmare. Can you imagine it? walking alone in utter darkness, just your hand on the wall, your mouth dry from dehydration, your throat and lungs burning from the rank air and the countless hours of screaming for help, your feet blistered messes and your legs sore to the point of exhaustion, just walking, nothing around you but solid darkness and cold, damp walls in every direction. You'd have so much time to reflect on your life, everyone you've known, every event replaying over in your head. Somewhere along the line, it hits you that you're not getting out. I wonder if she broke down and stopped moving on, giving in to despair or dehydration, sobbing to herself as she slumped to the cold, hard ground, nothing to comfort her, nothing to give hope. Or perhaps she just kept going until she physically could not, driven by either the hallucinations that gave her false promise of salvation or by the sheer will to live, keeping her going until she finally collapsed from exhaustion and dehydration. You know, we talk about how amazing and awesome and cool these places are in the catacombs, and then we are slapped in the face with the harsh reminder of our own mortality by, you know, the fact that it is so easy for us to just simply not be able to find our way back to the surface. And so we die in just the slowest way possible, really. Naturally possible, anyway. Where you're just, there's just nothing left in the tank, and you just slowly starve to death and die. It's terrible. So, yeah, moving on. There's another story of a lost individual in the catacombs, and this is the famous story of the lost man. The body that was never found, but the camcorder that was, with a tape that has been viewed millions of times, and there's even been a documentary made about this tape. The story goes that this anonymous and completely unknown man was recording his expedition in the catacombs, and he got to such a point that his camera was his only source of light. He can sort of be seen on camera growing more and more anxious as he goes deeper into the catacombs, traversing hallway after hallway, cavern after cavern. It is obvious that he begins to suspect something is following him in the darkness. He keeps, like, panning the camera behind him. And then he, like, swing the camera back around to his front and then run. This causes him to panic. His speed increases. He begins to run. The camera is ripped around frantically as he runs through the pitch blackness. At various points, he is scanning behind him with the camera, as if looking for some unseen stalker, whatever it may be, in the blackness. Then, suddenly, the lost man drops the camera in a puddle and can be seen running away from it, his only source of light. The camera rolls for nearly 3 hours before dying, and nothing more is caught on the tape. The lost man has never been found, and to this day, nobody claims to know who he is. What is known is that it took hours for a seasoned documentary crew led by cataphiles to reach the location of where his camera was found some years prior, covered in mold and waiting to be brought to the surface. Whether it be the coffin-shaped hallways, the vast expanses of nowhere, or the strange entities living and dead that patrol the nether, it seems obvious that this is not a place for the faint of heart, or for anyone who's unwilling or unable to take their life into their own hands and gamble it for amusement and adventure. This footage is crazy. For those of you who are just listening, I will be posting it on the YouTube. It's worth a look. Nobody knows who this guy is. Nobody knows what the situation was, why he was down there in the first place, what he was doing, where he went. But it's generally concluded, it's generally been concluded that he didn't make it out alive. And it's extremely weird how, as he was growing more and more panicked, he ultimately made the decision to just drop his one light source and run off into the darkness, never to be seen again. And as I said, the camera kept rolling. This took place in like the 90s, I believe, late 90s maybe. And the camera kept rolling for 3 hours. It's very Blair Witch looking. There's at one point in the footage, there is a scene that he comes upon where there is an arrow made of human bones that point him down a certain hallway. So he follows this arrow of human bones because, as you do, and it doesn't seem to bring him anywhere that he has been or recognizes or wants to be. He keeps going, and there's this part of the film where it looks like he comes across a skeleton, just bones, hanging on the wall. Like I don't know if you guys have seen like Game of Thrones or something, but like the flayed men flag, where arms and legs spread, chained to the middle of the wall. And some people say that that is actual skeletal remains, and others say it's a painting of skeletal remains. I'm not exactly sure. I haven't been there, and the footage, being from the 90s, is pretty old, and it's kind of hard to tell what's going on sometimes, but it's horrifying just the same. Whether it's a painting or actual skeletal remains, it is very creepy. So definitely check it out if you guys get a chance later when you're able to view stuff instead of just listen to it. And for you on the YouTube, that stuff's crazy, right? Like, what the heck is this?
It's very bizarre. These arrows point in a direction. Occasionally also, he stops to photograph roomfuls of bones, which means that he's very, very deep inside the catacombs. So basically, he's filming what he's seeing very deep inside the catacombs. Other than the point of view shots or pictures of human bones, the catacombs for centuries. So it is possible with these paintings that we may be able to retrace the itinerary to some extent. After about four, we hear his breathing get louder and louder, as though something was scaring him. He's frightened. Occasionally he stops, perhaps to try to decide which way to run among all the many different corridors. He's running faster and faster and faster, deeper and deeper into the catacombs. And all of a sudden, we hear his breathing get louder and louder, as though something was scaring him. He's frightened. Occasionally he stops, perhaps to try to decide which way to run among all the many different corridors. He's running faster and faster and faster, deeper and deeper into the catacombs. And all of a sudden, this video camera
And of course, there are those people who have come out and said, nah, that's fake. It's not real. There's no way that's real. But nobody has proof. These are just people speculating. What is known is that the camera was found by cataphiles. Allegedly, sometime after it was originally lost, the camera was in a bad state of disrepair, covered in mold and algae and stuff like that. But the film was intact. And it was later sort of given to a documentary crew who then made an effort to go down there and try to crack the case themselves, which, of course, they were unsuccessful at cracking the case, but successful at getting there. And it took quite some time. I've got one more story for you guys. This one, this is the story of my friend that I told you guys about. It's the last tale that I'm going to leave with you before I bid you adieu. This is a story from a friend of mine who had his own bizarre experience the one time that he went down in the catacombs, kind of on a whim. And tragically, he ended up passing away the following year in Afghanistan. So I'm not going to give his full name either out of respect for what little family he does have and respect for him. But his tale was interesting when he told it to me years ago. And at that time, I didn't have a podcast or anything like that. I was just kind of interested in the catacombs still. And he told me that, you know, I'm going to go to Paris. And I was like, oh, crazy. And I'll tell you guys more about it. I'm just giving you guys sort of an introduction to the story. But I did write this out. I wrote it in story format. And yeah, enjoy his story. When I got out of the army in 2013, I tried to stay in contact with as many of my friends who were still in as I could. I knew this one guy who will remain anonymous and who has since passed away in Afghanistan. We will just call him James. James was stationed in Germany, but would make trips around Europe when he had the leave to do so. He didn't have any real family to visit. In between deployments, James went to Paris. I was talking to him fairly regularly in these days because he was suicidal, and we talked a lot about that. He told me how he had met somebody who had told him of a place that led to the catacombs. He said that he was just walking down the street with this person, and they saw a hole in the ground. He made a comment about how the city should fix that, but the Parisian he was with informed him that that was an entrance to the catacombs. This didn't surprise me at all because James was a bit of a wild card, but he informed me that he intended to go down there. After he got out of the labyrinth, he told me this story and what happened. He told me that as he was going down the dimly lit corridors, he noticed an unusual draft, a breath of cold air that seemed to almost beckon him to go deeper into the abyss. It had a weird, comforting feeling to it. The tunnels twisted and turned, and soon he said he found himself in a chamber that wasn't like the others that he had been in. Bones were arranged in unsettling patterns on the walls. The air was thicker with a sort of mist, but it didn't really impede his breathing. He said it was almost like a wet dust. He said the walls seemed wet, but he couldn't see any standing water anywhere. And I remember that he described the silence as oppressive, and that it was so quiet he could hear his own heartbeat. In this chamber, James told me there was some kind of an altar-looking thing, but he didn't really describe it as an altar, he described it as more of a podium. When I see it in my imagination, it seems better described as some kind of altar. On the altar, he said there was a single candle lit, which wasn't necessarily surprising because he had already seen multiple other caverns that were also lit with candles. In this particular cavern, he said he was immediately filled with a sense of fear, but that he was able to control it because he had heard that the cataphiles would come down here and light candles at important places, only to leave them lit when they vacated the place. Assuming James was telling the truth, he told me that near the candle on this altar, there was a spiral carved into the stone. And if you guys know anything about me, then you know the symbol of the spiral is of particular importance to my theory of alternate dimensions being portrayed throughout history. Of course, that doesn't mean that this is some entrance to another dimension. It just means that there was a spiral down here, and spirals have traditionally been used to symbolize different dimensions and time travel. James went on to tell me that his feelings of dread eventually dissipated, so he felt like he could hang out here for a bit, and he did so. He said there were sort of like places to sit, almost like in a church, giant blocks of square stone, and after being there for a while, he said that he could feel some kind of energy fill the place. He described it as feeling like someone walking into a room from behind you. You don't exactly know who's there or if somebody's truly there, but it feels like you're being watched. I don't know if James was hallucinating or if he was actually experiencing something supernatural in the catacombs. I should say that right away. He said that the longer he stood there, the sadder he began to get, and that before too long, he was just crying uncontrollably. James said he felt as if he passed out, but that he also still felt awake and present in this place. Something that to this day I don't quite understand. It sounds like a form of sleep paralysis, which is something that I have traditionally suffered from, but I'm not exactly sure if that's what he was experiencing in this moment. He said he was awake and yet not awake at the same time. He said that he was flooded with terrible memories, and that's something I can relate to because James had PTSD, and that's a very serious sickness that almost every soldier is afflicted with. He told me in this moment he could have sworn he saw people around him and that he even called out to them, but they just stood at a distance and watched him from the darkness. I asked James if he thought they were ghosts or other people who are maybe down there watching him, like the people who lit the candles or something, and he said that he didn't know, but that their eyes seemed dark. He said hollow and the place felt kind of haunted. He said their eyes would occasionally meet his with what he described as the feeling of begging for mercy. He said it was almost like a sadness that these eyes were sort of looking at him with. James told me that as he cried, he could almost swear that he could hear other people crying as well. After James had been there for a while, he said that a cataphile found him, huddled down there, and woke him by shaking him and trying to communicate in French. James didn't speak very good French, but thankfully the cataphile was able to communicate in broken English as well. He was able to draw on James's map in a way that James understood, making sure that he knew how to get out of this place. James told the stranger that he needed help getting out and asked if he would guide him. The cataphile declined in so many words, however, and then sort of just walked off into the darkness with only a candle-lit lantern. Gasping for breath and drenched in cold sweat, James found himself alone once again in this dimly lit catacomb. His military training sort of took over, and he said he was able to pull himself together. When he looked at the map, he saw that the path that the cataphile had drawn for him to follow would lead him to an exit that was noticeably closer than the entrance from which he had come. He noticed that the exit the cataphile had directed him towards was actually quite close, and that he would probably be able to get there in less than an hour. Sure enough, about an hour later, James was crawling out of a different hole in the ground somewhere. He said that it was still dark out when he emerged into the fresh air of Paris, and that feeling of the air was one of the most beautiful things he had ever experienced in his life. Before he died, James sent me a message saying that there are places in this world that hold secrets that transcend time. And he was a bit of a dramatic person, you know, like, I mean all the respect in the world, but he was a bit of a, you know, he believed in things, like most of us who consume this kind of content believe in things, and when you believe in things like this, sometimes you are a little bit more dramatic and serious. That's just the way it is, because you're, to us, to people like James, it's such a real thing. It's a reality. And when people are constantly coming up to you and telling you that your reality is not in fact real, that causes people to be a little bit dramatic sometimes, myself included. But when he told me that, and I've got it in an email, that's how I knew, how I was able to write this out as well as I did, it was definitely the beginning of something more for me, because I remember that in that moment, I was so curious about what he meant, and I began looking into these things much, much deeper. James died 9 months later in a VBIED attack, and for those who don't know what that is, that's essentially a vehicle that has been rigged as a bomb. And in this particular case, it was driven by a suicide bomber. So that's my story, guys. That's the story of James. And I thank him for giving me a story to tell. And I thank all of you guys for tuning in to this part two of the Catacombs in Paris. If you guys have not heard part one, please go check it out. There's a little bit more history to it. And we get to talk more about how the catacombs became what they are today and some other crazy stuff in part one. So if you guys have listened to both parts, thanks a lot. It was a pleasure putting all this together for you guys, and I had a lot of fun. Like, follow, share, and subscribe. I need all the help I can get. We've got to keep the 21 CD podcast on this train. We got to keep rolling. And remember, don't drink the water and question everything. Later.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.